The Quintessential Podcast is proud to announce that we have a new presenting sponsor, Axia Time. Axia Time is a really cool watch company focused on ultra-custom watches to commemorate life's greatest accomplishments. Watches whose styling and quality match the significance of the accomplishments they represent. Axia Time is also partnered with all the leading lacrosse organizations to create All-American timepieces for high school boys and girls and college men and women. Axia Time even creates timepieces for elite awards like the Tourton and Naismith. If you're interested in a high-quality, Swiss-made timepiece to commemorate a great accomplishment, you need to check out their designs at axiatime.com. That's axiatime.com. If you're celebrating a team achievement, like a state championship, national championship, or even world championship, you have to check out the timepieces they created for teams like Jesuit Dallas, the University of Maryland, and even the USA U21 World Champions. Quintessential Podcast rolls through November. This week's guest, Teddy Jenner, as the National Lacrosse League faces off. 2023-24 action starts on Friday, December 1st. This is a league, Teddy, I played in. I actually got my start at ESPN covering this league, yeah, believe it or not. Back in the early 90s on ESPN2 with Leif Elsmo and Christy Lee. The TV package went away from ESPN, and then I kind of decided to play. And so I watch from afar. I haven't been to a game in a couple of years. But as we open this season, we got 15 teams, mm-hmm. some incredible cities. First of all, I want to know, like, what would you say is the overall headline for the opening of the season?
I think the biggest change in the offseason was the fact that we went away from East-West, and we're now just one unified division of all 15 teams. So we don't have that crossover playoff spot that we've had in the past few years. So everybody's in it. And you look at a team like Georgia last year that started the season 0-6, and then they rebounded and made that playoff push. You can't be falling down 0-6 to start a year this year, now that we've kind of gone to this one unified division, because you just can't make up games. So I think the fact that everybody's going to be in it right from the jump, the talent continues to get better each and every year, and we're just going to see the best of the best make it now, because it's just one division.
New commissioner for the National Lacrosse League. His play starts on Friday, December 1st. Games can be seen on ESPN+. And I caught a lot of them last year. Yeah, I know that because, like, the floor designs in the different cities, the different colored turf always, like, caught my eye. And I thought, wow, that was so crazy. Back in the day, they had, like, one turf that they moved from city to city, and they rolled it up, and it often didn't fit. There are 10 games on ESPN. And what's the extent of the coverage on TSN?
We've got a game of the week pretty much every week. I think we've got, like, I myself have 8 or 9 games doing TSN West. The other guys will have pretty much the same. So we pretty much have a game of the week up here on TSN starting that first weekend with a doubleheader of Saskatchewan at Halifax and then Panther City at Vancouver. So we're hitting the floor running right away with games on TSN. And I know ESPN continues to do a great job covering the game down there. So continually more eyes on our sport with the NLL and the PLL and everything moving forward is just continually going to be great for everybody.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Now, I caught myself last winter watching. I'd watch segments of games almost every weekend.
Yeah.
Just to check in, so to speak. I want to go through the 15 teams in the league, and mm-hmm. and you mentioned, like, now that it's no longer East West. I will tell you, the ability for lacrosse players now to go to places like Atlanta, Las Vegas, Vancouver, mm-hmm. San Diego. I mean, we're not talking about Rochester, Buffalo, and no. And Philly anymore. Like, I am completely jealous of the playing experience.
Yeah, you know, my first year I was in Rochester for 2 years, and then we made the trip out to Anaheim, and that kind of started this expansion to non-endemic markets. And, you know, we've gone through a few commissioners that have tried to do things a different way, and now under Brett, we're just kind of finding some stability. But you're right. Some of these markets are places lacrosse players never thought they'd be able to go. And, you know, we're in Halifax, you know, we're coast to coast in North America right now. And it's just incredible for the game. More kids are playing it. More people are watching it. and it's just going to continue to grow. So we're in a pretty good spot right now. And the fact that these teams have players living in market just helps grow the game in those cities.
Let's go through it. A to Z, the 15 teams. If you could give me, I don't know, 15, 30 seconds, no longer than a minute. If you give me 2 minutes, then we're done. But so I want you to save me some time. But let's start alphabetically with, I believe, the least successful team in the league last year, the Albany, as they were at 3-15.
Albany had a tough year. They went through some injuries and they just didn't get the consistent goaltending from Dougie Jamieson that they've had in years past, but I think he bounces back. They're a young team. Obviously, they'll get Dyson Williams next year, coming out of the college draft, but they're gonna struggle, I think, a bit this year. They still got some pieces to fill out, but they're gonna be a challenge. You know, no team's an easy out in the National Cross League, especially a team that's got Dougie in there.
I know one of their owners, Saul Kooman, who lives up in the Boston area. I think he's a not a majority owner, but he's got a share. How do they draw? What's the vibe up there in the Capital Region?
It's tough because, as you know, Albany's a lacrosse spot. You know, they got the University of Albany there, and the history with the Thompson brothers is legendary, and everybody that's gone through there. But they just still haven't found their way to the indoor game, and that MVP Arena is an outstanding place to watch a lacrosse game, but they're just not quite getting the fans there. And the biggest remedy to that is to start winning games.
Buffalo, the Bandits, really one of the original franchises in the league. Remember playing in the Odd, and just an incredible fan base. Another successful championship season. Dane Smith, Josh Byrne. What's your gut about the Buffalo Bandits this year?
I don't know what some of these sport books are looking at, but I don't know how you don't have the Bandits as the number one team this year after, you know, being to back-to-back championships, losing one, winning one. They didn't lose anybody. They still got Vino in net. You mentioned Dane and Josh. They still got DeHogan Anacoke, and their team just didn't change. And when you have a fan base as rabid as Bandits fans, and in Bandit land, as you know, you've been there before, it is a tough environment to go into. So when you don't lose anybody, you only get more experience and confidence from your season before. I think Buffalo is going to be right there at the top. I expect both Dane and Josh to break 100 points this year. It is going to be a fantastic year in Bandit land.
There's no sleepy, what we call in football, the sleepy noon kickoff. But when you play at Buffalo as an opponent and you walk into that place and you look around, you're going to bring your best against them because when you have 12, 15,000 in an arena, that's just the response it gets from lacrosse athletes. What's your favorite post-game spot? This is a real or pre-game spot in Buffalo.
Well, Cobblestone was always a place post game that you would go to. I remember they had a place called the Coliseum in Buffalo.
Yeah, the
It was like
Coliseum.
a 4-story bar that had like 7 or 8 different styles of
That's
bars in
right.
it.
It
And
had a
then had the rooftop bar at the top.
rooftop. It had a cigar area. It had,
You'd walk in the front door and there'd be like hip hop on one side, top 40 on the other. Then you'd go up the stairs and it'd be jazz and like, I don't know, something else. And you go to another floor, it'd be two different styles of music, like EDM and something. Then on the top, you'd have the cigar bar and the rooftop bar. It was a sight to behold. So Buffalo is just second to none when it comes to a lacrosse experience.
Calgary is next on our list. Jesse King apparently had a strong season last year.
Sure
As a
did.
group, they were 13-5. That's a great record.
The crazy thing about Calgary is their team hasn't changed, but their coaching staff has. Kurt Mlawski left. He went to Vancouver. So they bring in Josh Sanderson and Troy Cordingley and Phil Sanderson to be a new coaching staff. But this team hasn't changed. So I think a lot of people expect them to regress, not having Kurt Mlawski there as the head coach. But this team still has Christian DelBianco. They still have the best all-round player in the world, in my opinion, in Zach Currier. And they got Jesse King. This is a team that is built to win. They are going to surprise people just because of the fact that they're still the same team, even though they got a new head coach. And we talk about great environments in the National Lacrosse League. Calgary is right up there, and they do an incredible job. It is an awesomely loud, jam-packed, raucous crowd. And like you said, going into Buffalo, it's never an easy out. Same with going into Calgary. Those fans love to get on you, and that team is ready to play each and every night. And when you got Christian DelBianco between the pipes, you're going to have a long night ahead of you.
Kurt was a guy, I think he played for the Rochester Nighthawks back when I was playing. And he was a guy who got better and better and better every year. He was like a good player when he started, and then he became a star in the league. One thing I remember about him, he never got tired.
No.
That guy ran hard every shift the whole night. And by the end of the night, you're chasing him around. He was really lean, really fit.
It wasn't a sexy run.
What a pain in the ass to cover that guy.
It wasn't a sexy run. He was very awkward looking when he did it, but he was just so good. And he never really had the ball on his stick. He was an off-ball guy for the majority of his career. But he's turned that into being one of the best coaches and lacrosse minds in the game right now. Nobody is as prepared as Kurt is.
Colorado, 9-9 a year ago. What's the forecast for them?
The biggest issue for them is no Ryan Lee. Everyone knows Ryan Lee and all that he's been through. So he had another knee surgery, so he's not going to be available this year. But they still got Zed Williams. They still got Dylan Warden net, and their coach, Pat Coyle, again, one of those legendary players and Hall of Famers in our league that's become a coach, and another top-class fan base. You know, we've said three out of the four are just unbelievable environments to play lacrosse in. But that Colorado team is built defensive out, so they're going to shut teams down. The question is, will their offense be able to sustain the pressure their defense is putting on teams and score just two, three more goals than their defense gives up? So that'll be the biggest concern for them.
Stay out of the middle when Pat Coyle is playing defense. That's all I will say.
Casey Powell learned that one very well.
Rock, man. Yeah. His cross check. Woo.
Yeah.
All right. Georgia Swarm. We got Lyle, Shane Jackson, Andrew Q.
You know what? This offense is sneaky good when you look at who they have out the front. And yeah, they didn't have the greatest year last year. Like we talked about off the start, they got off to a slow start, and then they put in Brett Dobson between the pipes, and he really started to show that he is going to be a top-class goaltender in this league. Their defense isn't that great, but when you have a goalie like Dauber between the pipes, he's going to give you a chance to win. I think Andrew Q and Lyle Thompson put over 100 points up this year. I think Shane Jackson's going to be another MVP candidate for what he can do from the distribution side of the ball. But this is a market that struggles from a fan base perspective. And when you're not getting the fans, it's kind of disappointing as a player when you show up to work and you don't have the 15, 16,000 fans. So they grind, they work hard, they put in everything they have. I just don't know if they're quite there yet as a full team to compete with some of the others.
I'd love to see fans in the ATL show up.
Yeah.
With you know, the lacrosse is growing down there. The Swarm have by far the best uniforms in the league. If there's a sweater that I'd like to hang in here in my office, it would be that Swarm sweater.
Yeah, it's you know, they were in Minnesota. I was there their first year when we were in Minnesota, and we were unbelievable. And then John Arlotta moves them down to the ATL, and they've just been kind of struggling. They've had great seasons. They've had championship seasons, but they just haven't been able to get the ATL fans to stick around.
Halifax. I've been through Halifax. I took a bike right after college. I went on a week bike trip, camping out in Nova Scotia.
There you go.
It was like circled the island. My brother and a friend. My brother actually fell off his bike one day. It was scary, man. But we camped out. The mosquitoes were brutal. Yep. Saw some elk. Saw a lot of cows. I never realized how many cows were in Nova Scotia. But Randy Stotts was their best player last year, and they went 10-8.
Yeah, I really like this Halifax team. They've been one of those teams that's been on the precipice of being, you know, right there for the last few years. And when you've got, Ryan Tarafenko and Graham Hossick and Warren Hill between the pipes, you're not going to give any offense an easy night. But that offense is getting a little long in the tooth on the left side with Ryan Benesch and Cody Jamieson. But Randy Stotts injected some life into that team. And he has them playing at a whole nother compete level. I expect some good things from Halifax. I think they're a top three team, sort of the quote unquote Eastern teams. They're going to be good. And I think Mike Kersey has to get this team over the hump, or he could be maybe in one of his last years as a coach with that group, because they've been right there. They just haven't been able to get over the Torontos and the Buffaloes.
So you could see them turn 10-8. To 12-6.
Yeah, absolutely. If Warren Hill gets back to old Warren Hill that he was a couple years ago, this is a team that definitely surprises some people and gets, you know, that third, fourth spot in these standings. So I think they're a definite team that can turn some heads this year again.
Las Vegas was a new franchise, the Desert Dogs. I actually wore their sweatshirt that those folks were kind enough to send me. I've been to that hotel, the Mandalay Bay. They were out of town when I was there last year, flying home from the Hawaii Bowl. I got laid over in Vegas for a day. What a shame.
Oh, darn.
My daughter was miserable. I was like the happiest cat in America. I'm actually going to be out there December 1st for the Pac-12 championship game. I'm not announcing the game, but they got me doing something else. Yeah. And I know they open up on that Friday night, December 1st. And I'm trying to – I think I can get over there maybe for the second half. They won 5 games last year. I remember watching them, and I'm like, wow, they're really bad. And then a couple weeks later, they won a couple games, and it seemed like they got a little better. And it shocked me because my first impression was that they were horrible. And then they end up winning 5 games. What happened?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as a new team, they kind of were slow out of the gates. They were, you know, a group of guys that had only been together for 3 or 4 weeks in training camp before getting going. It was Sean Williams' first year as a head coach in the National Lacrosse League. So there was a bit of a learning curve. They had a lot of young kids. You know, Jack Hanna was really getting his feet wet in the National Lacrosse League. Everyone expected big things from him. I don't think people really expected him to be as good as he was. And then you had Rob Hellier and you had Jacob Roué and guys that were grinders and good leaders for this young team. And then you had Landon Kells kind of really cement himself as one of the top young goaltenders in the National Lacrosse League. So this was a team that kind of struggled, like you said, out of the gate. They started to turn some heads. They played spoiler a bit at the end of the year. But I expect a good turnaround from this club. I expect them to win 7-8 games this year. Not a huge improvement over last year because I still don't think they're there yet. But this is a team that's going to surprise some clubs, especially with Sean Williams, because he doesn't let anybody take a shift off. And with the history that he has and the story behind his son, Tucker, just kind of really inspires that whole organization to be better.
What I like about that franchise is Las Vegas, the hotel, the casino. There's a great sushi restaurant in that hotel. That's the type of destination where East Coast or Southern lacrosse fans can fly to Vegas for a weekend, have your fun, go see a lacrosse game. You can walk right to the arena.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's super convenient. And I think if I was Las Vegas front office, I would target people from out of town to come for a game as a destination, as part of your weekend.
Yeah, and they are doing that. I know Saskatchewan had almost like a couple hundred fans go down last year. So they are doing some sort of, you know, group packaging ticket deals for fans to come down in numbers from some of these other cities. So they are trying to attract for that reason. I think, you know, as you know about Vegas, the easiest way to get fans into anything is just handing out tickets on the street. So they've got a lot of people kind of coming in, just kind of checking it out, walking through the casino. Hey, you know, here's a couple tickets for the game. Come check it out. So they're doing a really good job. And I know Joe Tsai and that whole ownership group really wants it to be successful in Vegas. And I think year two is just going to be even better than year one.
New York Riptide have Jeff Teat. They won 5 games last year. He's worth the price of admission.
Oh, yeah.
Are they a better or similar or worse team than they were a year ago?
They are definitely better. Rich List did a great job in bringing some veteran D guys in during the offseason to help boost that team, because that was the one area that they kind of struggled. They had some up and down between the pipes. And, you know, as young goalies in the National Lacrosse League, it's never easy, especially when your team is struggling. But Cam Dunkerley and Kevin Orleman are going to be their two guys between the net, and they're going to give them some stability. I think they are much better than they were last year. And like you said, when you have Jeff Teat, there's no doubt that your team is going to be competitive. And Jeff is going to be doing everything he can to get this team into the playoffs. And I think they are a playoff team this year in the National Lacrosse League. But if you're in an arena or in a locale and the Riptide are coming, go see Jeff Teat.
They play at Belmont Park, right? Correct? Where the Islanders play?
Yeah. Yes.
The old new arena.
No, I think they're at Nassau still.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah, I think they're still in Nassau. Yeah, they're not at Nassau Park yet. Well, maybe. I haven't been out there. I have no idea what arena it is right now, actually.
All right, Panther City. They're in Texas, correct?
Yeah, Fort Worth.
Fort Worth, yeah, home of TCU. I've been there. That's a nice little downtown area.
And it's a great arena, from what I've heard, where the Wings play, the WNBA team.
Will Malcolm, Jonathan Donville, 10 wins a year ago for the fans in Texas.
Mm-hmm. This is a team that I think is going to improve on the floor. Off the floor is their biggest concern. They're just not getting the fans down there. And unfortunately, when games are on TV, they have the gray seats. So the empty seats really stand out quite a bit when they don't have a lot of fans. But the product is incredible. You mentioned Will Malcolm. He might be one of the fastest split Dodgers in the league. Jonathan Donville is incredible. I think Ryan Sheridan, the rookie, is going to have an incredible year. I know some of your fans of the podcast will know Ryan Sheridan from his NCAA days. He is a freak when it comes to playing the box game. He can do a lot of really good things. Josh Medeiros had a great year out of the back end. He kind of surprised a lot of people. It'll be questionable if Nick Damude, their goaltender, is fully healthy after an injury during the summer season. But this is a team that's going to compete. Tracy Klusky's their head coach, just like, you know, a Sean Williams or a Kurt Malofsky coach team. They're going to give you everything they got each and every night out. But they are going to struggle this year if they don't get wins early.
I have our next team is Philadelphia. I have 19, I think it was 94 or 95 when Gary Gate led the Wings to a championship in the old Spectrum.
Yep.
Being on the benches for that. Tony Resch was their head coach.
Legend.
Tommy Maracek.
Yeah.
I think they were going against Rochester one year with Paulie Gate.
Yeah.
What Gary did in that series was just unbelievable. The fans, you had 12 to 15,000. It was just such a great party. I have incredible memories of the old Wings.
Yeah.
They seem to be middle of the pack right now. Nine and nine. What do they need to do to become upper echelon?
Yeah, Paul Dey had a conservative effort to get younger and faster this year, and they've done that. They've added the Cotone brothers, who are incredible shooters. There's going to be no Matt Rambo this year, it sounds like. So Blaze Reardon's going to have to play a bigger role. Corey Small as well. This is a team that is going to compete, but I don't know if they're there yet. Their fan base is unbelievable, so it's always a fun place to go and play. They're just not quite there yet defensively. They got some great goaltenders, but I don't know who they think is going to be their number one, if it's going to be Zach Higgins or if Deacon Knott can come in and take that number one role. But, you know, Paul Dey has been around this league for a long time, and he knows what it takes to get a team to that next level. But I just don't know if they're there yet personnel-wise to compete with the other big dogs.
Paul Dey's been doing this for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
We got a lot of field fans, obviously, yeah, who listen to Blaze Reardon, and they know him from his days as a goalie at Albany, and they know mm-hmm. him for Team USA, and they know him for his work in the PLL, where he's the best goalie in the league. He's a floor runner, and he's an offensive player. Like, how do you describe his game indoors?
He's a bit of a bulldog. You know, when you see him play, he's banging and crashing in the middle. He's an incredible pick setter, and he doesn't have the ball in his stick a long time. He likes to play low on the crease for the quick six, fighting for loose balls, getting to the top of the net. But he's kind of unassuming at times when you watch him, but he just kind of gets to the middle and he bangs and crashes. And you wouldn't expect a goalie to be as deft at one touches and quick sticks, but he just has such good hands, Quinn. It's unbelievable what he can do and how calm he is. And when he's out there, you know, he's going to be effective. I think there at one point he had hat tricks in like three straight games. He can put the ball in it, and he's short runs to the front door and off, but he can put the ball in the net unlike any goaltender I've ever seen play box.
Yeah. No, he's got elite eyes, elite hands. His instincts are on. It sounds like he uses his body because he's a big dude.
Absolutely.
He uses his body and shoulders to create angles. Rochester has another Albany great thing, Connor Fields. Mm-hmm. They won 10 games last year. I enjoyed watching Connor play last year. He plays a more field style.
Yes.
But from a dodging standpoint, he seems like he's an issue to cover in the league.
He is. He can create space and give himself room to get his hands free, like not too many guys in the league, because of that field experience and knowledge. If he hadn't gone on his honeymoon in the middle of the season, he probably could have led the league in scoring and would have been up there in the MVP race. He is just a talent. And I know Canadian fans love to have him on the Canadian team during the World Games this past summer. Not a lot of people realized he had Canadian status, but you know, that is a team that kind of struggled. They curtailed at the end of the year. They were a playoff bound team and they kind of lost steam at the end, but this is a team with Rylan Hartley in net is going to cause some troubles. And Mike Hazen is a legendary coach. He's won championships as a player and a coach, and he's going to have his team ready to go. But it'll be interesting to see how McConvey does in his first year and how this team really rebounds after a disappointing end.
Fields is from Buffalo, grew up going across into Canada and playing box a lot as a kid in the Fort Erie area. How's Rochester doing fan-wise? They're still serving garbage plates downtown?
They're still serving garbage plates and dip dots and whatever those little frozen ice balls of candy are. But, you know, ever since the old Nighthawks moved to Halifax, their fan base has dropped a bit. And I'm not sure why that is. It's a historic old barn, the BCA. It's a great blue-collar fan base. They still have the diehards there, but their numbers have definitely dropped over the past few years. But again, like we've talked about some of these other markets, winning will bring fans back.
San Diego won 14 games last year. Mm-hmm. I saw where the team stays downtown when we were there this summer for the World Championships in the field side.
Yeah.
We were walking around and someone said, "Hey, that's where the Seals stay." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? These guys get to come out here to San Diego. They stay in that gorgeous hotel and they get to play pro lacrosse. That outdoor game that I saw last year was insane as well."
Yeah.
I mean, that's the life. And you wonder why guys are moving to San Diego and relocating mm-hmm. there permanently. Are they a team to beat? Are they a title contender?
Oh, absolutely. I think their biggest issue is going to be Chris O'Riglieri and net, and not because he's a liability, but just because it's really year two for him and it's going to be the first time he's going to be a starter. So if he can give them sound quality minutes like he did during last year when he was playing, I think they're going to be okay. You've got Audie Stotts, Curtis Dixon, Dane Dobie, Wes Berg running out the front door. This is a lethal offense. They bring in Kyle Rubish, who's arguably the best defender that's ever played in the indoor game. This is a championship-built team, and I think a lot of guys really are upset that they didn't do it for Brody Merrill last year because they were really all in for Brody last season. They wanted to get him that championship before he retired, but they just couldn't get it done. And they've made some changes. Pat Merrill has this group really hungry to get it done this year. And we talked about how some books didn't have Buffalo number one. Some of those books have San Diego as the number one team. So it'll be very interesting to see what they can do. Their biggest concern for me is who's going to be that third righty for this offense. Do they play Trey Leclerc up front, or do they bring in a guy that's just going to be a mucker to be that third righty?
The Saskatchewan Rush.
Mm-hmm.
8 wins, 10 losses last year. What city do they play? Do they play in Saskatoon or Moose Jaw or Regina?
Saskatoon. They play in, nice Moose Jaw reference. They play in Saskatoon, the SaskTel Arena. It's a fan base that really was boomed by the fact they got a championship team when they moved from Edmonton. And they won 3 championships in the first 4 or 5 years that they were there. They've kind of regressed the past few years. That dynasty is starting to sort of crumble. Mark Matthews has moved on. Rubish and Dilks have moved on. So they're not the same powerhouse they were a few years ago, but they still are a very hardworking, competitive team. They're a younger team, but I expect Robert Church to be a 90-point guy again this year. And if Frank Chiliano can have a summer or a winter that he's had in the summers, this is a team that can definitely compete.
Do you know how cold it must be there in the winter?
Minus 42 Celsius sometimes with the wind chill. Yeah, it gets nasty.
They sit way above Winnipeg. They sit way above most of Ottawa.
They're up there, man.
Holy crap. Barry Melrose is the only guy I know from Saskatchewan. He grew up in a farm there.
Yeah.
But he would mention the winters as being kind of rough.
It's nasty, man. You do not want to have to make a trip there in early January.
Toronto Rock.
Yes, sir.
I have fond memories of playing in Maple Leaf Gardens where I thought I was going to lose my teeth. ironic that their best player last year was American Tom Schreiber.
I don't know if it's ironic. He's just that damn good, Quincy. You know
Well,
that.
back in the day, that was like
No,
kind of
yeah,
the
like back in
US.
the day, the only American that ever played for him was Finneran.
Yeah,
And
like no, nobody played.
they were never a team that brought Americans in. They just relied on the Canadian talent. But they've been opening that door more and more, just because they're seeing what these Americans can do. But yeah, man, Tom Schreiber is a very special talent. You don't often see a guy switch hands from the top of the power play and shoot a lefty bouncer like Schreiber does. He's just so unbelievable. But you know, they won't have Latrell Harris this year, which is a big loss. So it's going to mean Jalen Rogers is going to have to play a lot more out the back, which he's normally used to. Nick Rose had a career year last year in net. I expect him to have a very similar year again this year. This is a team that, like Halifax, just hasn't been able to get over the Buffalo hump. And I think the fact that they might be able to avoid Buffalo in the playoffs to get to a finals really helps their chances. And I expect Toronto to be one of the top teams this year by far.
They have an amazing fan base. It's such
Yes.
a wonderful city, international flavor, tremendous food. There's a lot going on. Toronto, to me, is one of the most underrated places in North America.
Absolutely.
Vancouver, the last team that we'll talk about, there's
Yeah.
nothing underrated about Vancouver.
No.
My friends who cover NHL hockey, I've never been there, rave about it, And it looks incredible. What's the story with their lacrosse team?
This is going to be a team that I think a lot of people are going to have their eyes on this year. Owen Grant comes in as a rookie this year. He was their top draft pick last year. So their defense has gotten better. They've added Matt Beers, they've added Ryan Dilks. They get Owen Grant in. They still have Reid Bowering and Brett Mitski. Their defense is going to be one of the best in the National Lacrosse League. And then you add in head coach Kurt Mikulski and the staff that he brought in with him from Calgary. This is going to be a team that is much different in years past. And for the state of the league to have Vancouver as a competitive market and a top team is massive. And Kurt has done incredible work in the first month and a half that he's been on the job. And if you think you're going to see a Vancouver team that is going to give up 18, 19 goals like they've done in years past, you're wrong. This is a team that is going to be keeping teams under 12 goals. They're going to be putting up 14, 15 a game. This is going to be a team that is much different, and they are going to be a contender. I don't know if they're at the top of the league yet, but they're definitely going to be a playoff team, which they haven't been since they've really become the Vancouver Warriors.
NLL season opens Friday, December 1st. They go all the way basically through Memorial Day this year, I think, somewhere
Yeah, early
in
June.
May.
Yeah.
You can catch games. You got to get the app, ESPN Plus. You need ESPN Plus for college. You now need it for international. You need it for the National Lacrosse League. The linear networks on ESPN will have 10 games. And Teddy, you'll be part of TSN's coverage again.
I'll have the Panther City Vancouver game to start, and I got, like I said, I got eight or nine games on the docket, maybe more with some flex games as we get towards the end of the year. But man, I am looking forward to this season, Quinn. It is going to be one of the best we've ever had. And you mentioned Brett Frued, the new commissioner. You know, he's in year two of his job, and now he's got to get to work. That first year, he was just kind of taking stock and where the league was and shaking hands and checking out all the venues and cities and fan bases. And now he's got to get to work. And he and his staff have already been doing a great job, you know, with the NLL Unboxed that they just unveiled last week. It is going to be an incredible year, and he's got a lot of work ahead of him, but he knows the job and he understands what's at stake. And I think he's probably been the best new hire the league has done in the last few years. I'm excited to see what he does.
Yeah, I think that with Olympic inclusion in lacrosse in the sixes format, it's going to benefit American players to playing more indoor.
Absolutely.
You can't be a world-class sixes player if you don't have indoor experience. And if you witnessed what the Canadians did to the Americans in Birmingham, Alabama, what was it, in the summer of
Yeah.
2022, I believe, they annihilated them. Go watch that game on YouTube and watch the first half. It's one of the most impressive displays of lacrosse that I have ever seen. Canada scored basically on every possession with
Yeah.
gorgeous passing and patterns and put on a clinic. And if US wants to win an Olympic gold, I think it comes down to more collegiate players jumping in the NLL, and that
Well, you
starts
know,
on December 1st.
we're seeing more kids realizing that, Quint, and you know, CJ Kearse came up and played this summer. Joey Spallina came up and played this summer in Canada. More guys are starting to realize that box is a necessity for them, not just to future their college game, but their pro game and their international game, because it is a necessity. And these guys are having success. Joey Spelina had an unbelievable year up here. CJ Kurz put his name on the indoor map with the way he played this past summer. And I expect him to be a high draft pick next year, and Spelina will be in a couple years when he's ready. So, you know, we're getting the influx of Canadians into the college game, and all they're doing is saying, hey, man, won't you come live with me during the summer and play some summer ball and enjoy a summer in Canada? And these kids are reveling at that opportunity, and they're seeing the success that they can have and the improvements they make in their game by doing it.
My experience playing indoors was the most educational, beneficial, because when you're an American field player as a goalie, I mean, and you're playing indoor, you're very much out of your comfort zone. Every single thing is that, and that's how you grow. And so I have a lot of respect for the guys you just mentioned, because they're trying something different. It's going to be a little uncomfortable at first, but they're going to be a much, much better players. And the same goes for Canadians whose roots are in the box game. When they open up and play outside in the field game, it works both ways. Last thing, Teddy, if you were to encourage some fans in the U.S., what arenas spark your interest? Hey, if you're here, go to a game. If you're in Buffalo, like that's a can't miss experience. Where are the other can't miss experiences that you say, hey, go to a bar around the stadium before the game, go to dinner, go to the game, you'll have a great time.
Well, the two that stand out are obviously Buffalo, but Colorado is one. It's just an incredible atmosphere. You know, the teams that have multiple sports, so Philly, Colorado, those are the two. There's just so much to do around the arena. You can stay downtown. You can hit a bunch of pubs and restaurants. You can walk to the arena. Xfinity Live in Philadelphia has all those bars and pubs around. Heck, sometimes during the season, you can catch an Eagles game and then in the afternoon go to a Wings game, or go to an afternoon Wings game and then head over to the link and catch an Eagles game in the afternoon. So there's just so much to do, but the environments in Buffalo, Philadelphia, Colorado, those are the three top ones in the U.S. that just make the experience that much more enjoyable, because it is a raucous, jam-packed crowd. The music's going, the entertainment level is beyond, and it's just the best sport when it is inside a packed house. And you've been there, you've experienced it. You know what some of those places are like when 15,000 people are going absolutely nuts.
Yes. No, you give me the chills, Teddy, because I do remember those moments very well. You talk about adrenaline, and there's no shortage.
Whether I remember old Baltimore Thunder days. The fact that Baltimore had a team and Detroit had teams, and they were putting jam-packed crowds in those areas, I just reminisce about how awesome it was in the early, late MILL days. And I just hope that we can continue to get in some of those markets and they can get back to where they were.
Well, Teddy, we really appreciate your expertise and your time today. I've enjoyed this immensely. Hopefully we'll check in maybe three quarters of the way through the season, set up the postseason. It'll be cool. There's a lot of crossover, and I enjoy talking about it and supporting the NLL. And again, games on ESPN Plus, got 10 on ESPN. And Teddy, who are you working with on TSN for most of these games? Do you know?
Yeah, Brad Challoner has been my color guy for the last 3 years that we've been doing. We've got Chantel Chand as our on-floor reporter. The three of us actually all went to the same radio school together in Vancouver. So we all worked at the same radio station. We were all hired by the same guy who's actually our stat guy when we do games in Vancouver. So
really?
It's a pretty cool fraternity with the three of us. And we absolutely love what we do, and bringing the game to people worldwide is just an incredible opportunity. And I'm just glad that American fans get to watch games on ESPN, because it's second to none.
Well, thank you, Teddy. Your stat man deserves a lot of credit.
He sure does. Thanks, Quinn. A pleasure as always, my man. It was
awesome to
finally meet you down in San Diego, and we'll definitely catch up in a few weeks.
Yeah, enjoy the winter. I look forward to watching these games on ESPN Plus.
Thanks, my man.
That's it for this week's episode of the Quintessential Podcast. Thank you to our guests. Thanks to our technical director, Dr. Nick Z. I want to thank you for listening. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, Axia Time. A watch. What a better gift than a ring. I've got a championship ring. It's collecting dust in a box. I wear watches all the time.
Thank you, Axia Time. It's axiatime.com, and we'll see you next week.